This is the IBJ podcast for the week of October the 7th, 2019. I'm Mason King. Okay, on the most basic level, this is a story about an acronym, BWQOHT Incorporated. This is the name of an umbrella company, and under that umbrella, the BW stands for Big Woods. That's a chain of six rustic-themed restaurants founded in Nashville, Indiana, and now with locations across central Indiana, two more coming in Westfield and Noblesville, and the Hard Truth Saloon, which will be in the Bottle Works development in Indianapolis. The QO stands for Quaff On Brewing Company, which brews about 10,000 barrels of beer annually for the restaurants and for retail distribution. The HT stands for Hard Truth Distilling Company, which creates hard spirits, and in 2018 opened a 325-acre campus in the Nashville area called Hard Truth Hills. It combines distillery operations, a restaurant, event spaces, tasting rooms, a festival venue, and lots of unspoiled forest in a kind of culinary entertainment and outdoor culture destination. In total, BWQOHT employs more than 450 people. And what's really astounding is that 10 years ago, none of this existed. Everything under the BWQOHT umbrella has all come into being in the last decade. We're going to do this one more time. The BWQOHT empire began with a group of guys, three guys who started small, but had a big vision. And with us today to bring us up to speed is Jeff McCabe. He's the executive chairman of, one more time, BWQOHT. Jeff, thanks for inviting us down to Nashville.
Happy to be here.
There's no better place in the world than Brown County in October.
It really is neat, isn't it? All the leaves and just a wonderful place to be in the fall.
Now, I wanted to follow up on what I alluded to in the introduction. Do you feel like this has come really quickly? I mean, we think of Nashville as being kind of a very slow, sort of almost out of time place, but this place has developed very fast.
It really has. When I say we, I'm talking about me and my partners. I think we'd say in some ways it's been really fast, and in other ways we think it's been agonizingly slow. But all in all, yeah, pretty quick.
Now, you have a completely fascinating history, which we're going to allude to here in a second. But I wanted to first give you a chance to quickly mention your partners in these enterprises,
Great.
The guys that really helped make this run.
Sure. Well, Ed Ryan is our CEO. And Ed is a native of Bloomington. Like me, he spent some time outside of Indiana. He worked in New York, picked up a couple of master's degrees along the way, and decided to come back and raise his kids here in Brown County. I met him when he was a broker, and I had some money to invest. So that's how we met. The other partner that we started with, Tim O'Brien, ended up being my son-in-law. And actually, we were in business together with a bed and breakfast here in Brown County.
Wow.
And back in the beginning, before we started, Tim was actually a fine home brewer, and he ran a beer exchange from the back of the Allison House Inn in Nashville. A few years later, Jim Dunbar came along, and Jim does a lot of our construction management. And he and I actually met when we were flying helicopters in the Indiana National Guard back in the early 80s.
Then back to your story, you attended the U.S. Naval Academy, where you got your bachelor's in English. Then you flew helicopters in the Navy. You joined corporate America. Among other companies, you worked for the General Motors, the Allison division. Where in Asia, you helped develop new business relationships. From 1994 to 2003, you held a variety of executive positions at American Express, including, and this is an actual job title, Senior Vice President and General Manager for the United States and Canadian Large Market Commercial Card Business of American Express Corporate Services. And you have a funny story about this. How would people have known you from that?
You know, I realized people were actually seeing my signature when they got a letter welcoming them to American Express. So when a new card member got the letter with the card, it was my signature on the piece of paper.
Now then, in 2002, in your mid-40s, after all this experience, you moved to Brown County, Indiana. Why?
A couple of things. My wife and I owned property here in Brown County prior to that, and we had always planned to have a vacation home, maybe even a retirement home in Brown County. And honestly, after 9/11, she and I decided to accelerate that. we decided to go ahead and make the move back to Indiana.
So you were in the military.
Yes.
Did 9/11 affect you in ways that would have been different from the way it affected me?
I think the biggest difference was that in my role at American Express, we had travelers all over the United States and all over the world when that happened. And we had to find all those people, make sure that they were okay, and notify their families. And of course, we had coworkers in the World Trade Center and the World Financial Center. So,
sure.
So yeah, it was a big deal. It
made a big enough impact on you that you really thought you needed to make a serious left turn.
Yeah, it took some time to think about it, but it really helped realign my priorities, that's for sure.
And why Nashville?
We go all the way back to 1972. One of my first dates with my wife, and her name is September, was a picnic at the state park. And like I said, in the 90s, we bought some property here in Brown County. We always thought it was a wonderful place. And Brown County is a place that people from all over the Midwest think of from their childhood and that kind of thing. And living all over the world and traveling all over the United States, there's no place like it.
So what did you think you and your wife were going to do here in 2002?
Had no idea.
Yeah.
Other than kind of start again. My son was just starting high school. We thought this would be a great place for him to go to high school. We really thought we'd get here and we'd see what we'd do.
What were you doing before you got involved in the restaurant business?
I had a couple of different assignments or ventures, if you will. I was on the board of Concur Technologies, which is the company that revolutionized corporate travel, took it from people on telephones to the internet. And if you can remember back, there was a time when folks said that we'd never be able to book travel without a human being as the interface. That company changed that. So that was a 10-year run with them that kind of coincided with starting this. Also was involved in a software venture overseas. Did a lot of different things. Did a lot of fishing up in Canada, too.
How did the first Big Wiz restaurant come about?
Like I mentioned to you, Ed and I had started to work together on some investments, and we had actually bought some commercial property here in Nashville. There was a tiny little restaurant that became available in a back alley here in Nashville, and both of us thought that that would make a perfect brew pub because we needed a brew pub in Nashville. There wasn't one, and we needed a place to go. So we talked to the bank in Michigan that had foreclosed on that little restaurant. Lo and behold, the stock market crashed, and the price got better for that piece of property.
So this was 2008, 2009?
Yeah.
And my understanding is you guys did not have very much experience in the restaurant business.
We had no experience that I can really categorize, other than a lot of time eating in great restaurants, right, and yeah. Enjoying great service. So we felt like we knew what we wanted, and we started out with the idea that whatever we did, we'd apply good business practices to, from our experience, and that we'd please ourselves.
How was that experience of just getting that first one off the ground?
I'd call it kind of exhilarating, right? Because to do something you've never done before, whether it's riding a horse or starting a different kind of business than you've done before, it's exciting, right? So we actually spent a lot of time building the building itself. We got out there with the wooden mallets because it's a timber frame structure over the original structure. We helped him make the beer, and we worked with the gal that we hired to be the first chef to come up with the menus. We did everything, and so it was exhilarating.
Did you guys self-fund? Is this all your own money?
Us and the banks. We don't have outside investors, per se. Most recently, we put together a bond program for people who wanted to invest in bourbon bonds. But primarily, it's all been us and our partners at the banks.
So you needed to come up with some kind of concept, to kind of hang your hat on. How did you come up with what you have?
The story of Big Woods is pretty simple, right? We were sitting there drinking some of the beer that Tim originally created and talking about what we should name a place here in Nashville. And one of the folks at the table said, well, we live in the Big Woods. That stuck immediately. It seemed to work. We called ourselves Big Woods Brewing Company because the central piece at the place was the little brewery that we put inside this tiny little restaurant. And it was the same night that we came up with the spirit of the Big Woods, who's one of the icons that people are very familiar with.
So now you have one restaurant. At what point did you or somebody else say, we should do more of this?
It was really Ed that made the first move into more restaurants. We found out that we could acquire a building right across the alley from us that was about 10 times larger than the original restaurant. And it was him who said, wow, we should do something that where people with kids could come to the restaurant too, and it should be pizza, because the original is so small and the bar is so big that we had it be a 21 and over establishment, right? So we could go right across the street, and after several kind of big discussions and that kind of thing about whether we wanted to be in the pizza business, which we'd never done before either, we bought that building, and it actually had 8 tenants in it when we acquired it. It was more, a lot of people remember it as kind of a mall, and a Nashville-style mall, right, or Brown County-style mall. And over a period of 3 years, as leases expired, folks moved out, and we kept expanding in that space.
Okay, so now you've got 2 restaurants. Mm-hmm. Where did you go from there?
While we were expanding on the restaurant side, we were expanding on the beer side. So the first expansion for beer was into the other building. We built a 4-barrel brewing system. And once we got the pizza place built, we acquired the old bowling alley here in Brown County through the Historical Society, made a deal with them to help them get started building a new historical center in Brown County, and we took over the bowling alley and put our brew system in there. Now that's the system that produces 10,000 barrels of beer a year.
Okay.
So we went pizza, back to beer, and then other opportunities started to present themselves, like Bloomington. It actually was one of our first customers for beer outside of our restaurants who called us one day and said, would you like to have a restaurant in Bloomington? And I said, yeah, we might be interested. I said, how much time do we have to talk about it? And the owner said, well, I'm going to leave for Peru tomorrow, right? Let's try to make a deal before I leave. Right, and that's how we ended up on Grant Street in Bloomington. After Bloomington came Franklin and Speedway.
Okay, well, let's take a quick break from our conversation to hear from our sponsor. This is the IBJ Podcast.
The IBJ Podcast is sponsored by Krieg DeVault, a trusted and dynamic law firm representing a wide variety of local, regional, and national clients. Committed to each other and to every client, Krieg DeVault prides itself on integrity, professionalism, respect, and excellence. Financial institutions, global manufacturers, national healthcare providers, and successful organizations of all sizes and market focus rely on Krieg DeVault to create innovative and successful business solutions. Connect today at www.kriegdevault.com.
At what point did the germ of the idea for where we are now, Hard Truth Hills, when did that come about?
Well, I'd say we started talking about it at least 5 years ago, if not 6 or 7. We've always admired this piece of property. It used to be called Firecracker Hill, and a lot of people still refer to it as Firecracker Hill because this is where, at one time, the town used to launch the fireworks from. And if you can imagine this beautiful forest that we're in, over the time that Nashville's existed, this forest has been clear cut a couple of times. So this is fairly new growth, say from the 1960s. But it's just a beautiful piece of property. And once we started to get some traction of putting different pieces together, all the ideas just kept coming, right?
This is just 3 guys sitting there and trying to come up with something.
Yeah, well, by that time, Jim was involved, and that's an interesting story, too. Jim was retiring from Lifeline. He was flying Lifeline helicopters, and he'd stopped by to see me, and he said, I'm not sure what I'm going to do after Lifeline. And I said, well, let's fill your truck up with beer, and you can hit the road and sell beer for us. A week later, he was there with his truck empty, ready to go. So when we started to talk about Hard Truth Hills, all 4 of us were really part of that discussion. And by then, too, we had other people on the team who, either they're natives of Brown County or they're really part of the community now. So we all started to talk about it and think about what would be possible. And part of what we're going for here is a place, a campus, like you called it, or whatever, where we can bring all these different experiences together in one place. You can come up here just to enjoy the forest and take a walk, or you can go on a distillery tour, or you can go to the restaurant or see the live music or attend one of the festivals that's here.
What's super interesting to me is just how everything has been able to be based in Nashville, because I mean Nashville is very much its own kind of like place.
right.
In the minds of people in Indiana. How important was it to you that it just be so concentrated here?
Well, we thought we had a unique opportunity here. Nashville is a small town, 932 permanent residents, I think about 15,000 people in the county now, so there is a limitation to the workforce here, but it's such a wonderful place for tourism and for experiences, right? So we really thought that that we could make something special happen right here by taking advantage of what's great about Brown County. And, you know, the state park is absolutely wonderful. Some of the other attractions we have here now that are all centered on outdoor activity. I mean, this we've got the nation's third highest rated mountain bike trails here. We thought everything could emanate from here.
So you assembled 325 acres and built what we have here. How much did that cost?
It cost a lot, right? I mean, we had to acquire the property. We had to we had to start from scratch, right? There's nothing here to build from other than the trees and the dirt. I think we estimate that to recreate it would cost somewhere $20 to $25 million. We've been able to do it for less than that because we do a lot of the work ourselves directly, and we're pretty efficient. So we've done pretty well. But I think that's a pretty fair estimate of what it would take to recreate it.
You mentioned bourbon bonds before, and mm-hmm. the bank being a partner in that way. What does that mean exactly?
Well, what we did was we went to some folks who had asked us about whether there would ever be an opportunity to invest with us, and we really have always done well with bank financing, but we came up with a way for people to participate with us, which simply is a bond program that is backed by barrels of bourbon in the rack house. Really simple. As the as those barrels mature and begin to sell, we start to fund that bond. Very attractive to people, apparently, because we sold several of those.
So when did you establish Quaff On?
That was early on. From our prior business experiences, we felt like we needed to make sure we had things trademarked and copyrighted and that kind of thing. And once the beer started to take off, we realized that we wouldn't be able to protect a trademark for Big Woods beyond the state of Indiana. So we looked for another name that we could. And by then, Quaff On was something that people were saying in our bars and our restaurants, right? That's, that comes from Shakespeare. You mentioned I was an English major, right? But in every one of Shakespeare's plays, somebody quaffs, right? Somebody drinks heartily. And so that kind of stuck.
And initially, you were using it to make beers for the restaurants. At what point did you figure, we could probably sell this at Kroger?
Pretty early in the process, we thought the beer was certainly good enough. You know, we love the original recipes. We're getting great feedback from people in the restaurants. So then it was a question of capacity, because we were making 1,000 barrels a year from on a four-barrel system, which is a lot of brewing to do, a lot of repetitions. So as soon as we started to put together the 15-barrel system, we felt like we could start distributing.
And what are your goals for distributing? Do you want to stay in Indiana, or do you feel like you could take over the Midwest?
On the beer side, we think there's more beer to sell. We're the third largest brewery in the state, and we think there's a lot more beer to sell right here in Indiana, or we will become capacity constrained. On the spirit side, we've scaled everything so that we can become a national brand.
Oh, is that right?
We have, right.
So that was early on your intention, was we could be a national.
Yeah, and I'll explain that. It's probably an important note. So craft beer started late 70s, early 80s. That wave is long into its life cycle, and you're starting to see that with craft beer. And we think that craft spirits or artisan spirits is where craft beer was 25 years ago. So when we decided to invest in spirits, we didn't go through the income rental process we did with beer. We went from our pilot system to the system that we have here at Hard Truth Hills, which really has the capacity for us to ship product anywhere in the country.
Where is it being shipped right now?
Right now we're in Indiana and Kentucky. And really what we're trying to do now is become as relevant as we can in the states that are closest to us. So right now we're in Indiana. We rolled out into Kentucky, and really this is the first year of distribution for us. So Kentucky's going well. I think Michigan will be next. and we'll continue to pick up states around us.
So how important to the overall strategy was it to create Hard Truth Hills? How does that integrate into everything else that you do?
We felt like it was really important to have one place where all the brands could stand on their own, but also could really contribute to one great experience. So for us, it was really important. I'm not sure how everybody else feels about it, but to me, it's just wonderful to be able to experience any part or everything when you're here at Hard Truth Hills.
Were you inspired at all by, what we've already seen in Kentucky, for example, where they really have done a pretty nice job of making, especially spirits making, you know, a tourist attraction?
Yeah, we've been inspired by brewers and distillers. So for example, some of the things you see in the distillery in terms of the way we're able to have people actually watch the distillery at work with the catwalk and that kind of thing, we're inspired by other breweries like at Avery Brewing in Colorado. We were also really inspired by Sierra Nevada in Asheville, North Carolina. And I can't tell you how many trips we took down the Bourbon Trail and how many bourbon tours we did, how many distillers we talked to, and how much we kind of went back and forth about the best way, not just to create the spirits that we sell, but to curate this experience that we want people to be able to have when they're here.
So what is the vision now going forward for Hard Truth Hills?
Yeah, we're thinking about some kind of lodging. I think it'd be really cool to build a timber frame lodge. If you think about some of the architecture, some of the things we built before, like the big timber frame in Speedway, and some of the timber framework you see around here, a lodge seems like it would be a perfect fit in terms of our aesthetic and the experience we want people to have. We have talked to hoteliers because we know we don't know everything about that. We've actually looked at tiny homes and tree houses, and we're in that discovery phase, right, where we're looking at everything. But lodging seems to be a logical direction for us to go.
And what are your plans for Big Woods beyond the locations that we talked about that are sort of in process in Westfield, Noblesville, and downtown Indianapolis?
It's a good question. We are asking that question ourselves. We like being at scale now, and we enjoy the efficiencies of being at scale and the ability to negotiate with suppliers and that kind of thing, and the ability to have some kind of above store management that really can add the expertise and that kind of thing to systematize some of the things we do. So we want to continue to expand, I think, and take advantage of that scale we've got, as long as we can do it in a way that, obviously, we don't want to compromise the experience for people, right? So for us right now, it's learning how to get bigger, how to have more locations and still be Big Woods.
What has been maybe the most surprisingly difficult or problematic part of doing all this?
Financing, when you're doing this yourself, right? When you're investing your own money and you're working with banks, you're always proving yourself to the banks, right? So you've got to have really good partners, and that's a challenging process, but it's a good process. I'd call that very challenging. I don't think it's more challenging than trying to work with a group of investors, though. But financing, especially when you're growing a business and you're constantly reinvesting, you know, that's a challenge, right? And we call that delayed gratification, right? So every time every time it comes up for a vote with partners about whether we're going to take money out or reinvest, we reinvest because we see the ultimate potential of all this.
How are you feeling about how things have gone? If you meant to come here to retire, you've done a really bad job of it.
Yeah, I screwed that up. No, but I think things have gone really well. It's a really great feeling to walk around here at Hard Truth Hills or go up to our place in Speedway and talk to all the people who are part of the team and hear their stories about, you know, it'll be like, Jeff, remember when I was in high school and you said if things went great, I'd be running a restaurant, and here I am, right? I mean, those stories are wonderful, and so I feel great about it.
Well, best of luck to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
My thanks again to Jeff McCabe. If you want to learn more about BWQOHT Incorporated, the latest issue of IBJ has a great overview of the operation. Also, in this week's paper and in our rural theme, Anthony Shutley checks in on Beck's Hybrids, the country's largest family-owned retail seed company, as it takes on the big conglomerates in an industry that is rapidly consolidating. And back in the city, Indianapolis Black leaders are pressing the mayoral candidates for specific details on how they would address the challenges facing the African-American community. And they're asking explicitly for a Black agenda, and were disappointed when Mayor Joe Hogsett said their concerns would be covered by his wider economic plan. Lindsay Erdody has that story, which you can find in the copy of IBJ that you have delivered to your home or office, or find online at ibj.com. And remember to get full and unfettered access to all of IBJ's award-winning business content, just hit the subscribe button. Thanks again for making time this week for the IBJ podcast, which is edited by Leslie Whitenbenner. I'm Mason King, and we'll be back again next week.